Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Some kids have and some kids don't, and some of us are wondering.
This is what we needed. This is what America needed.
Thank you, Gilman.
Is Gilman still alive in The Voice? I haven't watched the show recently or ever.
He was on The Voice. Did that help?
He was on the show, about 2 months ago? Very nice kid. Lovely kid. This is a lovely show, the Ryan Kelly Morning After, broadcasting live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studio on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2, and InsideSTL.com. Charlie Marlowe filling in for the Tim McKernan. We've got Doug Vaughn. We've got Jimmy the Cat Hayes. Do we know where Tim is, by the way? I know that he's celebrating, I believe.
Florida, didn't he, to celebrate his anniversary?
His five-year anniversary to the lovely Anna Marie. So congratulations to them. I'm sure they're listening down in Florida.
Sometimes he does podcasts like the Dickens. I hope he didn't hear the 7 o'clock hour. But we're past it, and we're ready to talk Missouri football and big game and... Charlie.
So did you want to welcome on Gabe DeArmond or myself? I'll
always welcome Gabe because he's a guy who knows what he's here
to
talk about.
He knows what he's talking about, and he tells it like it is. Gabe DeArmond brought to you by Bud Light, the publisher at PowerMizzou.com. Good morning, Gabe. How you doing?
Not bad. What's up, guys?
Well, I'll tell you what, we're talking Mizzou football now, and it was an entertaining game at least. Just crazy offense, not much defense. I think, what was the stat that Mizzou put up the most yards ever against a Tennessee team, 740 or some yards, and still lost by 26 points? That's kind of a crazy thing when you read it.
Yeah, I mean, it was the second most yards in Missouri history, the most ever against an FBS team, most ever against Tennessee. I mean, at the end of the day, you're debating, I don't know which defense was worse, the one that gave up 63 points or the one that gave up 740 yards. It was, I mean, at no point was anybody, short of a couple interceptions by Drew Lock, really close to getting a stop. And that ultimately was a big difference in the game. Tennessee did make a couple plays in the second half on defense. Missouri really didn't make any.
What in the world happened to the Missouri defense that was top 10 in the country last year? How did it go so far south so quickly?
I don't know. I wrote about that a little bit on Saturday night. There was a scheme change and all that, and guys didn't buy into it, and they lost some guys, and now there are injuries. But nothing can quite explain this. I mean, that was Josh Dobbs is a good quarterback. He's not Randall Cunningham. And they have made – I mean, the defensive backs have gotten worse. I mean, South Carolina and Tennessee's receivers have looked like All-Americans against Missouri. Kentucky's running game looked All-American. I mean – I don't know, guys. I don't have an answer for what exactly has happened, but it's two different coordinators, two different schemes, everything, and they just can't do much of anything well on that side of the ball right now.
Offensively, they're doing a lot of things well. I mean, the Crockett looks awfully good, and Locke makes some good throws, so there's some hope for success in the future, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, and they bring back 10 of the 11 guys on that offense, and Demarre Crockett, like, he's not going to be a star. He is a star now. He has set all kinds of Missouri records. He's one of the, you know, there are three freshmen in the SEC who are really good this year. Benny Snell from Kentucky, Travion Williams from A&M, and then Demarre Crockett. I mean, three really good freshman backs. The offensive line has far exceeded expectations. And Drew Lock is, I can't get a handle on him. I mean, He made a couple of throws on Saturday, and he does this every week, that there were Tennessee writers in the press box going, oh, my God. I mean, you don't see five guys in America who can make that throw. And then he just makes a couple throws that you say, I don't even know what he's looking at. And he hangs around a 50% completion percentage, and I don't know what to make of him. Like, you see the parts there, but then you see something missing, and I don't know if he is going to get better and all of a sudden be what everybody thought he was as a junior, or if it's just always going to kind of be, well, it, there just was something that wasn't there.
Yeah, Gabe, when you're talking about Drew Lock and going back to the Georgia game, you're watching the first half of that game, and you're thinking that this guy a couple years from now is going to be a number, you know, a first-round pick in the draft. And you look at all of his numbers. I know Mizzou runs so many plays, but it seems like after every game he's throwing for 300-plus, just like this past game, you know, 320 yards. But then when you're watching the game, as you said, he makes some great throws. But then overall you're just thinking to yourself, is this guy really that good of a quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, the Georgia game was a perfect, you know, kind of encapsulation of what Drew Lock is. I mean, at halftime of that game, I said on Twitter, you were watching the future of the SEC. I mean, I was convinced we were watching two players become superstars on that night. And then the second half comes, and I look, like it or not, Drew Lock is one of the biggest reasons they lost that game. He threw three interceptions. You know, so I don't know what to make of it. I mean, the analogy that kind of popped into my head, and I don't know, you know, how much NFL football people in St. Louis are watching these days, but I watch the Chiefs every week, and they got a cornerback named Marcus Peters who, like, he has more interceptions in his first 20 games than any player in NFL history, but he also makes about two or three plays a game where you think, well, that's it. He just beat him. You know, I mean, you just it's such a wild swing, and that's what Drew Lock is.
We kind of had that here off topic, but with Janoris Jenkins for the Rams, he was the same way where he was such a gambler as a defensive back that he would always have a pick six, you know, a couple year, but he would also get burnt for way more touchdowns than a typical cornerback.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's the best analogy I can make for Lock. It's kind of like James Franklin as a sophomore was similar. He would have games where he'd have almost 500 total yards, and then the next week he'd have 120 and turn the ball over three times. And I said, going into like his last year, I said, what they need out of Franklin is the sophomore numbers, but instead of 500 and then 100, they just need 300 every week. The numbers for Drew are fine. It's just the consistency of performance isn't there.
And the kicking situation has gotten pretty desperate. I don't know how many Division I teams go into a game saying, well, we can't kick a field goal. We'll just go for it on fourth down. Yeah. How did it get to that?
See, I think that's an underrated aspect of Saturday. People want to – look, I get it. After losses at every program in the country, the quarterback sucks and the head coach sucks. I mean, that's the surface-level analysis that anybody with a Twitter account can do. But I don't think you can really get a grasp on how difficult it is to coach a game that you go into saying, well, we got to score seven because we can't even try to score three. I mean, that changes everything. I've never seen a game, guys. I posted this on Saturday night. I've never seen a team go for fourth and 17 from the opposition's 25 and 100% thought it was the right time. I mean, if Barry Odom would have trotted his kicker out for a 40-yard field goal, I'd have roasted him. But I had no problem going for fourth and 17. I mean, what else are you going to do?
Yeah, and then they missed that first extra point. And the one thing they can do, they're running the ball all over the field, but they can't kick. And then on the subsequent touchdowns, they continue to kick and not go for the 2 points to try to tie it up. I didn't understand that either.
I didn't really understand it, but they made them all. So that's fine. I mean, I get it a little bit because if you go for the first 2 point conversion and you miss it, then you're trying to play catch up all day. They made the kick, so it was okay, but the one that really, and I'm convinced, guys, that head coaches need somebody on the sideline standing right next to them to tell them when to call timeout and when to call 2 point conversions. I mean, Barry Odom was down 13 points. And look, Missouri wasn't winning the game, but they throw the touchdown to make it a 13 point game. You go for two in that situation because then you're a touchdown, a 2 point conversion, and a field goal away from tying. It's the only way that you can be in a two-score game without two touchdowns. We kick the extra point. You're down 12. It doesn't do you any good to be down 12. It was 100% the wrong call. I knew it, and everybody else on Twitter and in the press box knew it in the moment. But, I'm convinced, and it's not just Barry Odom. I mean, we saw the same thing with Pinkel over the years. There are head coaches all over the country. There are NFL head coaches. I mean, Les Miles got fired by not being able to manage the clock. And you know, clock management and two-point conversions, they need somebody like a program needs to hire somebody who that's their job. Just stand next to the head coach and tell him when to go for two and when to call a timeout.
Gabe, if we can get a quick basketball thought, the Tigers 2-2 on the season. They win yesterday over Tulane. Had that heartbreaking game last Thursday where you know, they're playing right there with Xavier, ranked number 11 in the country, and take it to overtime and lose by one. Obviously, that would have been a signature win for Kim Anderson. What do you think about the prospects for this year's hoops team?
Well, I came out of that Xavier game and I said, look, heartbreaking loss, a lot to like, but it only means something if they build on it. And they didn't build on it. They came out and just got boat raced by Davidson. That game was over 10 minutes in. And that was what we said has to be gone. Like, okay, if Kentucky comes out and puts you out of a game 10 minutes in, that's one thing. Davidson can't do that. And they did. And then they come out and they're down 10 to a Tulane team that is like sub 200 in most metrics starting the season. And I understand they came back and won, and they deserve credit for coming back and winning. But I don't know how you come out of Orlando thinking that this is a significantly better team than we've seen the last couple years. I saw way too many things that looked a lot like the last 2 years.
Frankie Hughes looked fantastic in the first couple games, but he disappeared there against Davidson too, didn't he?
Frankie Hughes, I've said this the first three times I've watched him play. There are going to be nights like his first game when the three-pointer is going in that you say, wow, this kid is something else. But when the jump shot isn't falling, there are going to be nights where he goes 2-for-13. And I don't remember what the numbers were against Davidson. He's Clarence Gilbert. He has in the gym range and no conscience whatsoever. He will shoot the ball. You know, I think it's John Sundvold that said, if it feels like leather, he's going to shoot it. And he didn't say it about Hughes. He said it about guys in the past. And That's pretty much accurate, and there's going to be nights where it's a really good thing, and there's going to be nights where it's a really bad thing.
Gabe, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thanks for joining us.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
All right, thanks, Gabe.
That's Gabe DeArmond, publisher at PowerMizzou.com, brought to you by Bud Light. And speaking of alcohol, for those who make their corner of the world a little more interesting for us all, there's only one drink that will do. Tullamore Dew, the official Irish whiskey of the morning after, a whiskey of true character, glasses up to responsible drinking, Cat.
Has some Tullamore Dew or Gobblable.
Tullamore Dew, how about that?
Tullamore Dew or Gobblable. Hey, the one thing we've missed today, and if somebody can text in and let me know.
We've covered everything else.
No, the biggest news of the sports world this weekend, I haven't found out a result yet. So did Goldberg defeat Brock Lesnar at the WWE last night in the pay-per-view?
I have a clue.
So if anybody can text that in, let me know. Was it Goldberg or Lesnar?
Could you find that on the internet?
I could, but I just thought I'd ask the question before I get on the internet and take up some of my data.
Oh.
Worst case scenario, Larry will know the answer tomorrow.
I'm not waiting till tomorrow.
I said worst case scenario.
You have a phone. It's not going to use that much data to just Google something.
I know, I guess.
If you're on Wi-Fi, it doesn't use any data, does it?
Probably not. I'm just
lazy.
From
what I saw, he won.
Goldberg won?
Yes. I didn't even know Goldberg was wrestling again. Didn't he retire about 15 years
ago?
No,
this isn't Goldberg. That goal, it's Joel Goldberg.
Okay. Yeah. Somebody did.
He got him in a big, big hand iron claw that Fritz Von Erich used to use. And Baron Von Raschke used it as well.
Somebody did text in a Joel Goldberg picture, which they do often. God. Apparently he did a magazine spread for losing weight. And so they have the before and after picture where he looks like
he's topless too.
Yeah, a good 25 or so pounds. Definitely leaned out. Congrats.
Didn't he get a new gig doing something?
What do you mean?
Did I read where he got a new gig?
Well, he does
Royals.
Yeah, he's been doing Royals, and then I think he does some hockey, and he does some basketball for UMKC now.
I thought I read where he got a new gig.
But that might be like an off-season gig. The UMKC thing is new. Okay. I think he's doing some ruse basketball.
And this topless modeling, I guess that would be a case.
Maybe that was what I missed, yeah, topless modeling.
Hey, we have the commish, Rick Hummel, joining us at 8:30 talking Cardinals baseball. Plausi, let's go back to some of these fun with audio clips. We brought up Nick Saban earlier about Bammon potentially going back to the NFL. A clip for Nick Saban was not happy during his halftime interview.
We're not doing a very good job of pass protecting. We're not throwing the ball on time. We don't have much consistency on offense running pass. You know, we've got to know what kind of game we're in, and we've got to go play better.
how have you told your players what kind of game you are in?
Well, I'm going to tell them right now. I mean, I'm embarrassed the way we played this half.
Thank you, Greg.
You want me to tell them that?
Sure.
Okay, fine.
I like that. They played what? The Chattanooga Choo-Choos? And it wasn't as lopsided. I know the spread was about, what, 55-ish? And what was the final score? 31-3 or something of that ilk?
I hate those
It was
games.
Sort of boat raced.
I just
boat raced.
Hate those
I like that term,
I
by
do
the way.
Too.
And somebody in the text line says they don't like boat raced. I endorse the usage of the term boat raced.
By the way, Goldberg defeats Brock Lesnar in a stunning win, according to the mayor of St. Chuck on the text line.
He's biased.
But that might be off the Huffington Post.
That's a biased source. Hey, more fun with audio. As we're speaking about coaches, how about Jeff Fisher on Jared Goff's first NFL start?
All right, hit the lever, plow.
Clip five.
As far as Jared's concerned, you know, he did a really good job. No delay games, was in complete control, you know, in the huddle. Did a nice job on the line of scrimmage.
Was what about when the play started?
The outcome of the game, but I think you can see the light. There's light there for him. So we'll continue to allow him to get ready and continue to progress. Crowd, yeah, the crowd was great. Yeah, they were great. They knew what to expect. They, you know, they saw our future here today, and they were really good. I'm just disappointed for them and for us that we weren't able to, you know, hang on and win this game.
It truly proves that there's alternate realities out there. But you got to love the fact that the first thing he said is no delay of games.
Yeah. Good in the huddle and on
and
the
line of scrimmage. Couldn't all of us do that?
I mean, we could
probably be okay until they actually snap the ball, and that's when the problems would begin.
I will say this. I'm not just this blanket hater. I do hate a few people affiliated with the organization. I like many of the players. I don't want the team to succeed. That said, I'm not going to say Jared Goff, in this situation, his first start, really poor weather conditions, if you saw that field. But again, he didn't throw any picks, I believe. Managed the game. I didn't see anything one way or the other to say he's going to be great or bad. I'll let him play it out before we, you know, judge him.
Well, you're not judging him on one game, is what you're saying. You're bright enough to realize one game doesn't mean that much in the scheme of a career.
I think it's fair to speculate, though, that when you draft a person number one overall and also trade 6 draft picks, including a couple first rounders, that guy should be a stud and probably should start from day one, especially when you see guys like, what was Dak Prescott, a 3rd, 4th round pick? You got the quarterback at Cleveland, Kessler, who's playing well. Carson Wentz, I know that Philly hasn't won a lot of games recently, but if you watch that game last night versus
But there's
the
been
Seahawks,
a lot of guys that have struggled in their first NFL start. And the thing is, with a young quarterback, you say, well, you know, we limited his scope. We didn't want to give him the whole playbook. The Rams don't really have a full playbook anyway. I mean, it's not like he has a ton of weapons that he can incorporate.
And I was kind of joking earlier.
Why do you have to limit a playbook 10 games into the season? Why isn't the guy...
I was kidding, because I don't think they have the most complex thing anyway. Well, you know what? If you have a young quarterback who's getting thrown into the fire, his first NFL start, and let's say you have a team with a great running back and great receivers, you probably do try to just focus on getting the ball into the hands of your playmakers and putting it on them.
You would think.
And the Rams don't really have that to a large
Every pass I saw him make was about 4 yards in length.
And
Sam Snead made a career out of
Norm Snead. Sam made a career out of putting.
Norm Snead.
Yes.
I think the funniest
4
thing
yard
about the
passes.
The Fisher
and Les Snead is the GM of the team. Hot shot.
Nice job, Charlie. And what I didn't take, which was so funny because Jeff Fisher was like a woulda, coulda, shoulda type coach. They talked about his mobility. He goes, yeah, there was a couple great plays he made down the field. If there weren't flags for holding, it would have been an even better play.
Otherwise, our guy would have got sacked if they hadn't held, but it was a really nice play.
My one thing on this, though, I don't think Jeff Fisher is a good NFL coach anymore, but I give that dude mad props because he is just stealing money. And you know what? I can't be mad at the guy because he's made $7 million a year for 5 years with the Rams. He's going to get an extension because we all know his true job, to use a term that Kat doesn't like, is to shepherd the team to Los Angeles.
Shepherd.
And he's going to get another 3 years at probably $7 or $8 million. So as much as I would love to criticize the guy, I wish I was him.
I don't think
I
there's another coach
with my hat on backwards.
There's not another coach in the NFL who could have called United Man Lines and say, hey, can you pack us up and move us to LA? the fact that he had that kind of experience is reason enough to keep him on as coach and let the team go in the tank.
I've said this before. Like, to me, they don't exist. So I don't root against them week in and week out because I don't really care. But I will enjoy the fact that when he's right on the cusp of becoming the losingest coach in NFL history, when he gets there, I will enjoy that.
Four more losses.
I will enjoy that.
He's three away from
because
tying
I agree
Dan
with
Reed.
You. When you're hearing that that HBO series where he said, "I'm not going 7-9," okay?
We're not going effing 7-9.
I don't want to curse.
But that's my whole point. And I brought this up because I understand that St. Louis, from a national perspective, first of all, we have every reason to be mad. After a while, I can see people saying, "Oh, it's sour grapes from St. Louis." My whole point is I put zero thought into the Rams. I will say that first game when they got beat by the 49ers, I did really enjoy watching them lose. Since then, I just haven't really cared. I've given it zero thought. That said, again, I was just sitting on my couch, flipping back and forth on Red Zone for all the 3 o'clock games, and I can't help how I feel. It's just how I am. I'm sorry, Doug. But when the Rams lost that game, I just felt really good. And I can't help that. It just happened.
Well, I think a lot of us did. Yeah. That's a normal reaction, I think. I'd like to see them lose the rest of the way. I'd like to see them finish 4-12. And there's a possibility that they might do just that. And then Fisher gets his extension. And he would also break Dan Reeves' record for losing his coach in the history of the league.
And apparently, what, he's tied Tom Landry, but Tom Landry coached, I believe, about 80 or some more games than Jeff Fisher. Also, Plowsy on the text line, or someone please, I can do it in a break, but they said, look up Bill Plaschke's transcript on the game and Jeff Fisher. They said it's very good, so maybe we can try to find that. We have a lot of live reads to get to here before Rick Hummel. One of our favorite spots, the Wheelhouse, downtown St. Louis, 1000 Spruce Street. You got 32-ounce big beers with 30 flavors to choose from, 36 televisions with select game audio. You can check them out for parties. Email parties at wheelhousestl.com. And we're having our holiday party there, correct?
Yes.
It's early December. What are we talking here?
December 8th, I believe.
Should be a fun time. It's always a fun time, guys. Larry Nickel dresses up as Santa Claus. And we
get to hang with the listeners?
Yeah, we spread some cheer and share some fellowship.
That's our toy drive, too, I think. We have people bringing toys.
That's always a great event as well.
And we can put aside the things that divide us and instead embrace the things that unite us, like Christmas and good tidings, the holiday season, and being together.
Correct. The holidays, it is just a great time.
I love it.
It's a great time. Good food, family.
What exactly is a good tiding? Is that like when saying something nice to someone?
I say to you, hello, friend, have a good day. That's a good tiding.
Tidings and joy to you, Doug.
Yeah. We never really use that word tidings for anything other than
we should,
Christmas.
Though.
And I like it when Doug invites us all over and we have nog. Sitting around the fireplace at his cage.
We've never once done that.
Why don't you do that?
I don't like nog.
Well, we don't have to drink nog.
He's a cocoa guy.
I'll bring over some Swiss Miss. We can all just sit around, sing carols.
We wouldn't do that. That would never happen in 100 years.
All you got to do is invite.
Well, I don't think everyone would come.
Charlie would.
Anyone would come.
Charlie be excited to get an invite.
No, he wouldn't.
I believe that the...
I don't get those invites, especially now. After
birthday
the
party.
See, I believe...
Yeah,
believe
you're never coming now.
People say that you two were on different pages politically, and that may be true, but I think the real root of the disagreement is the fact that Charlie has long considered you a friend and has reached out a hand of friendship...
Across party lines.
...and have slapped it away time and time again.
No, I would just make the point that we're coworkers, like with everyone here.
But he wants to be friends.
Yeah, Plaschke rips the Rams.
What do we got?
I can read you an excerpt from it if you would like.
Please do.
At this rate, the only thing they're completing is an early alienation of a Los Angeles sports fans who demand and deserve better.
Why do they deserve better?
A few days after breaking ground on their Inglewood sports palace, they dug themselves a deeper Coliseum hole. On the afternoon when golf was cheered on the video board by everybody from Snoop Dogg to snowboarder Shaun White, the crowd wound up soaked and the Rams season continued to stink.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little excerpt from Plaschke.
Well, welcome to our world.
And rips Fisher throughout, basically.
Yeah, but we were a baseball town when we didn't show up and go crazy over the team.
And that they're different because...
Because they deserve a winner.
Right.
They need and deserve a winner. That's Hollywood because, out there.
And when they don't show up, it'll be because there's so much else to do. And
right.
Which is true.
Yeah, the team's bad, so why would we show up? But in St. Louis, well, you're just a baseball town.
You know what I'm going to do for this show? Because I'm a follower. I don't follow him, but I enjoy the tweets of Rob Lowe about the Rams, and mm-hmm. I noticed he did not have a Rams tweet this morning. He has some of the other weeks, so I'm going to tweet at Rob Lowe.
Do that. See if I can, he was probably busy filming something.
In the meantime, Salt and Smoke, it's Bringus Yadingus, located 6525 Delmar Boulevard. We're talking barbecue, bourbon, and beer. One of our favorite spots. Give them a call. They can cater your next event, 314-727-0200. We had Salt and Smoke cater a birthday party this summer, and it was fantastic. Everybody said the brisket was the best they'd ever had.
Was it?
And Deke Dotum had Salt and Smoke yesterday for the first time.
How
and
about
he
that?
He had high praise for the brisket, pawning his hole, finishing his fries on the tank lid.
And one of the most sought-after items at Gobble Bowl Saturday was the $75 gift card to Salt and Smoke that Tom donated.
Really? As
everybody wanted that.
Great spot. Great reporter is the commish, Rick Hummel, joining us right now on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Of course, the Hall of Famer, the commish. Good morning, Rick. How you doing?
Hi, boys. How are you? I'm fine.
Oh, we're fine.
We're doing well. Hope you had a good weekend as we kind of get ready for the winter meetings coming up here in early December. But the Cardinals, they make a move in signing a left-handed reliever, Brett Cecil, to a pretty big deal for a left-handed reliever. 4 years, $30.5 million. What are your thoughts on Brett Cecil coming to the Cardinals?
Well, first of all, they had a terrific need with Duke out for the year, probably after elbow surgery. Lyons out for a couple of months into the season, at least with knee surgery. They lost Kiefer through waivers, so they only had Seegers really as a reliable left-handed reliever down there. And this guy's been pretty good, especially was good in the postseason last year. He didn't allow a hit even, I don't think, in five or six games for Toronto.
When I saw this deal, I'm thinking the guy who's probably the most happy about this deal is a guy like Kevin Seegers, knowing that a few years down the road he can get a deal like this.
Well, the Cecil would be the happiest because he got $30 million.
I understand that, but I'm saying I think, and we saw, we saw... Good job, Cat. We saw it all postseason with a guy like Andrew Miller and how these relievers are relied upon more, not just the closers. Do you think we're going to see a lot more of this, of not just your closer getting more big-time money for just like these guys that are more specialty relievers?
Oh, absolutely. That you're right. That's a kind of a trend-setting contract there. Well, you break it down, it's $7.5 million a year for a guy who's been in the big leagues 8 years, which I guess isn't that ridiculous. But if he can get left-handed hitters out, and he's not bad against right-handers either, he should be a big help to them. And yeah, and I think you're going to see more guys of that ilk get contracts like that. Now, you're not going to see these guys used as Francona and even Joe Maddon use these relievers in the playoffs. They'll be done by about May 15th if they're used that way.
I think when folks look at his career numbers, they're like, what is this? But in a way, he's like Zach Duke in that a lot of his unfavorable numbers were from when he was a starter, and since becoming a reliever, the numbers are much better. And as you point out, the splits against lefties are very good.
Yeah, I think 225 is a number there. And he won 15 games as a starter like his second year in the big leagues. But after that, he did struggle, and they got him to the bullpen. And I watched the American League playoffs as well as the National League playoffs, and I saw Cecil warming up just about every day for Toronto, and he got in most of those games anyway.
Commish, are they done with the bullpen? And I ask that because the success Kansas City had a few years ago with their bullpen, where if you could get six innings out of their starter, the game was over. You already have O. I don't know what their plans are for Rosenthal. You have Seegers. You have Cecil. Is there a chance they would go out and maybe spend some money on a Kenley Jensen and have that 6, 7, 8, 9 set up?
Well, I don't think so. I think they got to get their leadoff man / center fielder situation taken care of first. Rosenthal could wind up in the bullpen again. They have a lot of starting pitching, and they're going to give him a chance to, you know, train as a starter this spring, as it were. But I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up in the bullpen again. You still got Broxton out there too. He signed for next year, so I don't know that Jensen is there a priority for him. He'd be nice to have, but I mean, Rosenthal was that good a year ago.
Yeah, I think with the way they look at Rosenthal is if they need him as a starter, fine, they're stretching him out. Otherwise, they're hoping he can be what he was in a different role. and pitch multiple innings and be that gateway toward the late inning guys. Anyway, last I talked to John Mozeliak, he had said, you know, we would like to get a center fielder, but we think Grichuk is a good defensive player and eventually will get better, because I don't think last year necessarily is reflective of what he can be defensively in center. I got the impression that they realized that the guy that they're looking for, the center fielder, might not be there, and they might turn their attention to getting an offensive-minded left fielder. Do you get any sense about which direction they're going
to
go?
I think they've got either way to go there, Kat. You know, the guy could be a left fielder, actually, sure. There are guys that are playing center field that might be better left fielders. Like, let's say Adam Eaton for the White Sox might be a better corner player, a better left fielder. Even Dexter Fowler could be a better left fielder than a center fielder in this ballpark. You don't know if he's going to be playing center field if he signs a four-year contract. You'll be playing center field that long in his career. So I think the outfielder has to be a leadoff guy. He doesn't necessarily have to be a center fielder.
And, Kamish, do you think what the Cubs did last year in not only winning the World Series, but when you look at their young position players that are going to be there for a while and knowing that they can spend down the road if they want to re-sign an Arrieta or bring in another closer if Aroldis Chapman leaves, how do you think that influences what John Mozeliak does? Or do you think that matters at all? Just knowing that John Mozeliak did a lot of media this past week, it seemed like if you read into his comments or you saw him, it sounded like he didn't want to make just an incremental change to you know, to get a couple more wins. And maybe that's because the Cubs are much, you know, more in front of them anyway. But it just seems like he's not going to make a big deal just to do it to try and all of a sudden catch the Cubs.
Well, the difference is, I guess, Charlie, is that for the first time in 30 years, a team in the Cardinals division won the World Series that wasn't the Cardinals. Like, the New York Mets won in 86 when they were both in the East. And nobody else in the Cardinals division has won a World Series until now. So that means that, you know, you want to catch up with the best in the league, but the best league happens to be in your division. So you do have to keep a real close eye on those guys. You can't be finishing second to them and taking your chances on wild cards. They do have to get better themselves just to be a better club. But that team in their division has to be run down as best as they can possibly do it.
Let me ask you about Aledmys Diaz, because I tweeted about this, and I've read some questions about it. I guess that there's two schools of thought with Diaz, whether or not it's okay to make him your everyday shortstop for a couple of years. Like, I looked last year, obviously the offensive numbers were outstanding. I thought he got much better defensively as he got to the latter portion of the season, once he got past that four error game. And I know that they have the kid that everyone's high on, the draft choice in the minor leagues, that could be the shortstop of the future. But I look at Aledmys Diaz as a guy who got much better defensively as the season went along. Obviously, you know, he dealt with injury also, but I thought he was much better and will be better this season as a Cardinals everyday shortstop. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. He got much better. And then he hurt his thumb, and he came back, and he wasn't real good at the end of the year. He had a little trouble throwing, and he just didn't look comfortable out there. Maybe he wasn't quite ready to be playing. I don't know. But he didn't look good at the end of the season. But for the 2 months before he got hurt, maybe July, August, or June, July, he was very good, I thought. And I think he will turn up as a third baseman ultimately, because they have Sosa, and they have Cordoba. They have shortstops all throughout their system. But I like him okay at shortstop now, and I think he can be a plus player. He's not going to be a gold glover out there, but he can be good enough.
Rick, I see between losing the salaries of Matt Holliday and Brandon Moss and Jerome Williams and Jordan Walden, that's about $30 million that they don't have to spend this year that they did last year. You think there's a chance that they make a really big splash on somebody, that they've got some money to really go after a superstar?
Well, I think any free agent signing is going to be a big splash. Now, there are not many free agents out there that fill the Cardinals' bill. There's Fowler, and if you want to get crazy, you could try to see what Cespedes would cost, because he could play left field, he could play center field too, and he was going to cost a whole lot of money though. And I don't know if this is a spot Cespedes would like to play. I think he likes to turn up in the the big capitals of the country here. So yeah, they can do that. Now they do have to pay a guy like Martinez a lot more this year. He's now arbitration eligible, and he's going to make a big jump, just as Rosenthal did last year. And Watkins is going to get some more money this year. So those guys internally, they're going to have to pay a little bit more too.
And Commish, final question. You have to give us an answer, okay?
Don't tell him what to do. He's a Hall of Famer.
Please, please. Who is the Cardinals' starting center fielder in 2017 on opening day, in your opinion?
Grichik.
Gotcha. So probably no big move then. No substantial.
For a left fielder, there'll
be a left fielder. Yeah.
Yeah, that's I agree with that.
That would have been your better question. Who's your starting left fielder next year?
Well, we kind of asked that earlier.
Try that again, Charlie.
With the whole Adam Eaton deal.
Yeah. Thank you, Commish.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Rick.
Rick Hummel, the Commish, joining us on the Appliance Discounter phone lines, the Hall of Famer. I agree with him. I don't think they're going to make a substantial move.
Well, I think they're going to get a very good left fielder. You wouldn't consider that substantial?
What do you consider very good? I don't think they're going to get a name guy necessarily. Some of these people that we're talking about. That's what I'm saying. I think they're going to get a solid player that's good and is probably controllable for a couple years. You know, if they go via
control
trade.
Is obviously cost certainty and everything is a big part of how the Cardinals operate. I get that.
But if we're talking,
I think it's going to be a guy that fans are going to be. I have no idea who the name is, but I don't think it's going to be a guy that people are going to have to run and Google the name like many had to do with Cecil.
I think they might go after somebody really big. They've offered huge contracts the last couple off seasons to Pujols, to Hayward, to David Price. None of them took them up on their offer, but they've got that kind of money to throw around.
I don't think they love Fowler, though. I think they
it may not be a free agent. It may be a trade of somebody who makes a fortune.
I think the fact that they laid out so much money on Cecil, not saying that they don't have enough where they could do something else. But I think that tells me that they're probably working on something in terms of a trade and take on a big contract.
I think so. It seems like they got an awful lot of relievers there at the back end. Did you just pay $7 million for a seventh inning guy? I don't know about that. And when you finish 17.5 behind the Cubs, it wasn't just that they lost. They got boat raced by the Cubs. They're going to have to do
something. You're not counting Spirit wins.
They can't just kind of go with the same group and say, hey, maybe it'll be different this year. But it won't be.
You know, I think the fact that they lost Duke, who could have been a key part of their bullpen, and they knew what they needed, and they knew what they were going to have to pay, and they didn't care. And John Mozeliak said this. I don't know if he was on with Marty or someone tweeted it out, but it said, we kind of have to change the way we operate a little bit and get out of our comfort zone. I think they looked at that need with Cecil, a guy who fit what they were looking for perfectly. They knew they were going to have to pay. And I think they know it's going to cost them to get an upgrade in the outfield, and they're willing to do it.
I just think, and the Cardinals are always going to be a good team and a good organization. I just think everything has changed now because the Cubs not only won the World Series, as you just said, they won by 17.5 games in the division, and they clinched with about 3 weeks to go.
Schwarber.
There's a very good chance that they could have won more games if they were motivated down the stretch and if somebody was pushing them. I just think you're in a really tough spot because even if they sign a $160 million player or trade for that guy, I still don't think they're near the Cubs.
Not unless you get a drastic upgrade in the pitching. The one way to close the gap real quick would be to get a Chris Sale or somebody like that.
Right.
Who would give you 20% of the games. You're going to have one of the best pitchers in baseball out there. I'm not sure a left fielder does it, but a top-of-the-line ace-type pitcher might close the gap a little bit.
And I'm not saying that the Cardinals cannot beat the Cubs, but I'm saying for the next 2 or 3 years, when you just look at both teams on paper, unless there's crazy injuries for one way or the other, I think everybody looks at the Cubs and say they're going to be damn hard to beat, not only in the division, but in the playoffs for at least another couple years.
And, we don't know what Reyes, he looks great. He could be a number one type starter if he emerges into that position. Martinez continues to progress. You get Lance Lynn back. The Cardinals have the potential. Now, I'm not saying don't get Sale, because obviously that makes them that much better, but the Cardinals have the potential of having a very good starting rotation, and you wonder, if the Cubs can duplicate what they did with their starting rotation.
Unless there's a trade, too. I mean, you go out and get Sale, but you've got Leak. He's not going anywhere unless you want to trade him and somebody's going to take that contract. You got Leak. You got Wainwright. You got Lynn coming back. You got Martinez. You got Reyes. You don't know what you're doing with Waka. I mean, somebody's going to be out of that rotation. Out of the four I mentioned, Leak is in. Wainwright's pitching. Martinez is in. If Lynn comes back, There's your rotation. Yeah, now you bring Salen.
Unless someone gets hurt.
People always say, well, you can't have too much pitching. But what if none of those guys get injured? Who's sitting in the bullpen?
Well, if you have the opportunity to get Sale at a cost that you feel you can handle, that's a good problem to have.
You put him at the front of the rotation. But one of those guys I mentioned aren't starting.
If you're looking to upgrade, yeah, I'd do that. But without him, the Cardinals have the makings of what could be a really, really good rotation. The question is, what is Reyes? Because I think everyone agrees, Martinez, we're just seeing the beginning of what will be a really good pitcher. Everyone, I think, would agree. Lance Lynn is going to win you a bunch of games. You know, what is Wainwright? And I expect Leake to have a better year. I don't know if he's the front of the rotation type guy, but he'll be better. That stacks up as a pretty good rotation.
I agree with you. I think you can certainly look at the Mike deal and the Mike Leake deal and wonder how that's going to look over the next few years. But I do think last year is probably going to be the worst we see of Mike Leake. I do think he'll be better.
Better behind him,
right,
too.
But also, I think with Lance Lynn, who I really like, I think he's a workhorse, eats innings. I do think it's fair to wonder how he will pitch post-Tommy John, even though he came back and threw a little bit in the minors this past year. Some of those guys that first year, you know, you're probably going to be on an innings limit anyway, and you just don't know. Adam Wainwright, the first year back from Tommy John, was not near the Adam Wainwright that we saw before and even that next year
after.
The
fact that he had the procedure right after the season bought him a lot of time, and he feels like it's not going to be an issue. And again, you know, he was throwing 95 in the brief, you know, rehab period that he had, where if they were so inclined, he could have pitched. He could have come back and made a contribution. They were like, no, just take the time and come back as Lance Lynn.
The difficult questions that they're going to face is, do they go ahead and continue to give Mike Leake 30-some-odd starts if he's the same pitcher we saw last year? He had an ERA of 4.69. He had 203 hits in 176 innings. You don't win divisions with pitchers like that in your rotation.
Right.
Many
what, do you
and
Wainwright, do? What do you do with him?
Wainwright wasn't much better. Wainwright had very similar stats. And I don't know that at the age of Wainwright that you can expect him to get a lot better. I don't know that you're going to see Leake get a whole lot better.
Leake is a ground ball guy, and there's no question that, you know, balls that weren't, you know, got ground balls hurt him. They're not necessarily errors, but let's face it, the infield wasn't very good last year, and I think those numbers are a bit of an outlier. I'm not saying he's Cy Young caliber, but I think he will be better. And then the question is Wainwright. Well, you're not asking Wainwright to be the number one guy in the rotation, even the number two. He can be, but I think if he's where he is in the rotation, number three, number where, however you want to slot it, that's a pretty good guy to have. And I wouldn't bet against him having a very, very good year.
I wouldn't bet against it. But if he doesn't, they're going to be in the same boat they were just in. I mean, if you have two, if 40% of your rotation is Wainwright and Leake, and they have about the same seasons they just have, you're not going anywhere.
And both making big money. Yep. It's one thing if your fifth starter on the team is a Tyler Lyons type who has a 4.5 ERA and is making the big league minimum. That's the thing with Leake. And I do agree with Kat, though. If you look at last year, his ERA was about a run higher than his normal season. So he did not have a good year. I think we can all agree on that.
Wainwright or Leake?
Leake. Leake's, I think his career ERA going in was like 3.7, 3.8. So he had a worse year than I think everybody expected. I don't think he will be as bad, but I'm not saying he's going to be some under 3 ERA pitcher. I think it's certainly fair, and I know we have hindsight, but last year, I don't think John Mozeliak was going to make a deal like that. He obviously went after David Price. That didn't happen. And then Lance Lynn with the Tommy John changed things. And certainly with hindsight, you could say, you know, it probably would have made more sense instead of giving a guy like Leake 5 years and $80 million. Maybe you find that one-year stopgap guy, the one-year $10 million veteran, knowing that, you know, you have an option with Jaime and knowing that you have Lance Lynn coming back the next year. Because now you do look at that Mike Leake contract and you say, well, I mean, what are you going to do with that for another 4 years?
Yeah, I didn't even mention Jaime when I was going through the rotation of a guy they picked up.
Well, I think Jaime's going to be traded. I think that's why they
good chance
picked
of that,
up
yeah.
his. I would say it's a probability.
But if you have no takers.
Someone's going to want. You know, we can go back and forth.
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Someone will want. I'm not saying you're going to go to the Angels and say we want Trout straight up, but he has value to a lot of teams. For $12 million, a lefty pitcher at his age who has very good career numbers. Now, he might be damaged goods, you know, in St. Louis based on his past history, but you look at his numbers, there's going to be a number of teams interested, I guarantee it.
You know who doesn't have damaged goods? Appliance Discounters.
Well done, Charlie.
All of their goods are not damaged, Doug. They have six locations in Missouri and Illinois to serve you. Check them out online, theappliancediscounters.com. They're in Baldwin. They're in Webster Groves. They're in St. Chuck. They're in Arnold. They're in St. Louis on Dolores Street and over in Fairview Heights, Illinois. Appliance Discounters, we love them. You love them. Doug loves them. You got what? You got something from their
refrigerator
back in the day, yeah.
Not back in the day, just a few months ago.
Yeah, back in the day, two months ago.
Well, when I hear back in the day, I think that's like 10, 15,
well, I misspoke, 20. And I was trying to just kind of cover
okay,
myself.
Okay, yeah. I got a wonderful refrigerator there.
Now, ice maker?
Ice maker's in there.
If you
trick out your kitchen with a whole bunch of stuff from Appliance Discounters, and you grab a knife and say, hey, I think I'll prepare dinner. Oh, wait, the knife is dull. You know where you ought to go?
Appliance Discounters.
No, Bertarelli Cutlery. Bertarelli Cutlery is where you would go, because they will sell you all kinds of fabulous kitchen products there at the retail area. Of course, they specialize in sharpening knives, but they also have that great retail area right there in the front of the store. They also service all major brands of food prep equipment. They like to say no business is too big, no business is too small for their family service. They have the highest quality cutting boards on the market. I'm telling you, this Bertarelli Cutlery, I'll be darned. Yes, go visit Bertarelli Cutlery on the Hill. You're saying, okay, how about an address? You got an address, fella? I have. 1927 Marconi on the Hill. Quality products at quality prices. That's what Bertarelli Cutlery does. At Bertarelli Cutlery, where there is never a dull moment.
Well done. Seamonster wrote on the board here, I think he's not happy with me. He basically said, we have to grab these lives by the pee. A phrase that one of our presidential candidates at the time said. He said, Charlie, you have to grab these lives
by the pincer, and walk them down the road to a great live read.
At times, he's sneaky vile.
Or the paper. Did you say the paper? Is that what you meant?
Pincer.
The paper.
Start knocking them out, Charlie.
Well, I just did one, then Doug did one. I don't think that people want to hear like seven straight. So I try to do one every about, 8 minutes. But when we have such a hot take conversation, it's hard to just kind of, shoehorn them in, Doug.
Don't say shoehorn. I would say this, the holidays are right around the corner, and you might have already started your Christmas shopping. Hey, it's that time of year where the bills are starting to pile up. My guy Ryan Kelly and the Home Loan Expert Team can help you get through the holidays with a cash-out refinance. Now, that's what I just did. I just did a refinance where I took a bunch of money out.
And went right to Vegas. Let it ride.
I lowered my term from 20-year to 15-year.
You put it all in the Rams.
Took money back
out. It's
golf
time.
And the payment is still less than it was. That's because with a 15-year now, you're in the twos. And with a 20-year, you're in the threes. So if you've got a 4% or something, a mortgage rate, you owe it to yourself to call Ryan Kelly. He can save you hundreds of dollars a month and literally tens of thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. And we all know what a great guy Ryan Kelly is. Ryan Kelly and the Home Loan Expert Team work hard so you don't have to. If you're looking to refinance or purchase a home, no need to go anywhere else. So call Ryan at 314-7197. 314-781-9700 or visit thehomeloanexpert.com.
Well done, Doug. The text of the day, a free turkey sandwich from Lion's Choice. Email of the day, get them in. Two tickets to the Ambush versus the Chicago Mustangs. Saturday night, 7 o'clock at the Family Arena. Soccer fans, log on to InsideSTL.com where you can get a St. Louis Ambush 5-ticket flex pack for 50% off. Log on to the listener rewards section to purchase a 5-pack of tickets, normally $110. For just 55 smackers, use it for 5 tickets to one game. 1 ticket to 5 games, or however you'd like, based on availability. Do you ever use that word, Doug, smackers? How many smackers is it?
I may not have ever used that word.
How many smackaroos?
I don't think I've ever used that term.
Bucks?
And I probably won't ever use it. But who knows? Things change. People change.
Changes. Turn and face the strain.
Yeah, I may use
Bowie. Can I give a plug out real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
I know we're doing a Q&A with him, with Timmy, in December, but I am about 4 or 5 chapters. I started reading more of it this weekend. Lucky Bastard by Joe Buck is a great, great read. I'm not just saying that because he's a friend of the show. It is a fun read. Fun. You'll cry. A lot of great stories in there.
Cry?
And it's, because some of the stories he talks about the family and his dad. But it's actually a great read, and he did a great job writing it. So I would suggest go picking it up.
I'm kind of holding out, and maybe I'm overstepping my bounds, but I would like to kind of block off 3 or 4 days where Joe comes to my house and reads it to me.
Reads it to you? Like bedtime
story? You think I have a shot at that, Doug?
I think there's a chance you could get in your jammies and pull the covers up right below your
knock
chin.
On the door. It's Joe.
You could sit on a chair right next to it, the rocking chair, and just read you until you fall asleep.
Let's knock out a few chapters.
I think it would be like E on one side, you on the other side, Joe laying right in the middle of the bed while you two are all bundled up, ready to go to sleep, and Joe's reading the book to you both.
Huh. That's cute.
Maybe, like 3 nights we could get it done, right? 2 nights?
Well, he's a busy guy. You'll have to ask him.
How many smackers does the book cost?
I didn't pay, but I don't know. I didn't see a price in there.
Good holiday gift.
I don't think it's that expensive. Maybe 15, 16 bucks, maybe.
Oh, that's nice.
Doug,
that's
it's also a good gift for dads and grads.
Don't say dads.
That's what
grads.
You say during the springtime.
Well, okay.
If there's a book out there or a good, nice tie, you say it's a good gift for dads and grads.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get Rick Ankiel's book, which apparently you can pre-order now. That should be great. That will be a movie.
Who's going to play him?
I might.
Zac Efron?
You're too old.
All right, then not me.
Bradley Cooper.
He's a little old, though, right?
What is he? He's about 40 now, isn't he?
I'm going to say Cuba Gooding Jr.
Well,
that would be funny. That would be funny if it was a black guy, and they never even referenced that. Like
Wesley
there
Snipes.
Was room in there.
There was something different there.
Yep. Could happen.
I like Juan from the PP Corps. He just texted in a nice suit that he purchased from Macy's. And he said, hey, Chuck, do you like the suit I bought over the weekend? It's a nice blue suit with a brown belt.
What?
Why would he ask you about that?
Which he's proud of the suit he bought.
Which Macy's?
I'm guessing Galleria, probably.
Because, Doug, you've been known to buy some suits there, right?
At the, usually the West County location.
The guy always tells me, hey, Doug Vaughn was in here.
Yeah.
And I go, we got him a nice pant.
That would be my home Macy's.
They always go, can you tell them to stop wearing the blue blazer and khakis every day?
No.
That's what they want. They want to sell you more suits.
Well, sure.
True story. This morning, as I'm coming out to the car, it was chilly, you know?
It was more than chilly.
And I look at my car, and it's got frost on it. And I'm like, here we are again. It's that time of year. And Doug, if you want to take care of that problem, you go to Audio Express. Because this year, you should get a hold of the cold weather, get ahead of it, by visiting your friends at Audio Express.
And that takes the frost off your car?
The remote starter.
Oh,
I see. The remote starter.
Yeah. Well, now that makes sense.
Yeah, you start it from your car, from your house, and then by the time you get out there, the car is nice and warm and toasty, and you can jump right in and come on down to the radio station.
Yeah, I'd like that.
What'd you think, Doug? The new speakers were going to melt the snow?
I thought maybe the music was going to be so darn hot that the frost would melt.
Audio Express, they carry only the best name brands like Viper and Code, and always at the absolute lowest installed price, and remote starts make great holiday gifts starting as low as $129. With professional installation included. Come see why Audio Express has been the leading car audio, remote start, and security dealer for over 42 years today. Isn't that kind of a sobering experience, though? I think it was the first time for me this year that I had to get out the scraper. I had to get out the scraper.
I didn't use the scraper, but it was cold. It was a kind of a smack in the face.
Are you saying you have a carport and not a garage?
We have a garage, a two-car garage, hashtag blessed. We have not yet set up our cars to have the little opener in the car. Once we do that, we will park in the garage, but we have not done that yet.
Do you know how to do that?
We have to go to like a Lowe's or a Home Depot and
reprogram them.
Reprogram your garage door and all that.
When you bought the house, they didn't give you the
Look at the user's manual.
Well, we don't have the actual items, is what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying?
But you have the clicker in your car?
No, we need to go.
You don't have your car, I bet you have a button that would program a garage door opener. You touch the button on the garage door opener in the garage, you touch the button at the same time in your car, and it programs.
That's all you have to do.
That's kind of how it works, yeah.
I'll tell you what, how about this? After the show, let's go out there and you show me that button. I want to see this, and I'll
have a button in the back of your garage door opener. You don't have to go anywhere to do that.
This might not be funny, but Catfish did text in. He wants to know if Doug's new fridge has a tuna crisper in it.
I saw that.
A crisper? A tuna crisper.
Answer the question, please.
I don't even know what a tuna crisper is.
Apparently, it's the latest rage.
Well, why would you want crisp tuna?
It's like when you go to a Subway, they'll say, do you want it toasted?
Yeah, you want crispy tuna.
The bread, I don't know about the tuna. Don't tuna just come in cans you put in your cupboard?
Yes, don't say cupboard.
I bet you got a separate Lazy Susan just for tuna and tuna items.
I don't.
Don't get your finger caught in that Lazy Susan,
yeah,
I'll tell you.
It's a bitch. I agree.
Can you say that?
Yeah.
He just did, and there's no one there to
tell. Hey, let's take a break. We have the mini exit poll coming up next, a lot more live reads, and some surprises coming up in the second half. Surprises, Doug.
All right.
Think about that. All on the Ryan Kelly. I'm not going to tell you. It's a surprise. All on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, broadcasting live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studio on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.